From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, National Guard troops began arriving in Chicago this week. The president's mobilization came without a request from the mayor or the governor, and they took the matter to court. A judge has now granted at least a temporary restraining order. Meanwhile, protests continue in Chicago over immigration enforcement. We'll discuss that situation. We'll also look ahead to the legislature's fall session coming up. That and more ahead on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, good to have back with us once again, Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So a federal judge, Hannah, in Chicago temporarily stopped deployment of the National Guard troops here in Illinois. As I mentioned, some of these Guard troops are already here. We've seen that some Texas troops arrived this week. So what does this mean at this point? What can people expect if they're on the streets in Chicago?
Well, so far from what I've seen from journalists and folks on the scene, no National Guard presence at the ICE facility in Broadview. They are enjoined from being there per U.S. District Judge April Perry's temporary restraining order. But, you know, I highly doubt that the 200 Texas National Guard troops that arrived earlier this week have, like, already gotten back on planes. They may very well be back in Elwood, where they had first gone earlier this week before they were truly deployed. Which, you know, they only really made their appearance on Thursday, which is the same day that the judge had the hearing and then ultimately gave her ruling from the bench. So it's the 200 guardsmen from Texas, and then, of course, the Illinois National Guard, 300 troops were called up, federalized by the Trump administration. That took a little bit longer because those folks need to go through training. So it's unclear where even they are in that process. You know, DHS is definitely not very transparent about that. There's also 14 California National Guard troops that were called in from most recently Oregon, and they were supposed to be training Illinois National Guard troops. But, you know, basically the gist of the order is that for the next 2 weeks, the Trump administration is enjoined from, like, truly deploying these people out to the streets. Of course, the Trump administration has already, you know, shortly before midnight last night, filed their notice to appeal the decision in 2 weeks when the TRO expires. Judge Perry will hold another status hearing to decide whether to extend it another 2 weeks. And, you know, I guess we'll kind of go from there. But for now, I think it's up to see how fast the Seventh Circuit wants to take this up. You know, in Oregon, this past weekend, a Trump-appointed judge had issued not one, but two rulings blocking the National Guard from being deployed. The second ruling coming Sunday night after it was, I guess, made clear to this judge that the Trump administration had basically no plans to abide by it with Stephen Miller, you know, a high up official in the administration, basically calling it illegal insurrection, even though it was a Trump appointed judge, you know, calling her some sort of leftist. That decision was quickly appealed, and actually also Thursday, while the hearing was going on in Chicago, the Ninth Circuit out west was hearing oral arguments in that appeal. And according to reporting that I saw, it seemed like two Trump-appointed judges in that three-person panel seemed amenable to arguments that really the president should get wide deference when it comes to matters of national security and military, you know, need to deploy. Those arguments also came up yesterday during the hearing in Chicago, and I thought it was really interesting. how Judge Perry kind of approached it. And she said at one point, like, does it matter? I mean, like, I understand the principle of giving the president legal deference, but like, does it matter if the president is relying on facts that are wildly, out of step with the facts on the ground? Basically, the Trump administration has painted a very dark picture of what's going on in Chicago, what's going on in Broadview, which is, the ICE facility is basically 13 miles directly west of downtown, small suburb where this ICE processing facility has been for almost 2 decades. And she noted that basically for 19 years, weekly prayer vigils have gone on without incident until September, when the administration ramped up its immigration enforcement activities in Chicago and suburbs. Basically said, like, the facts on the ground have indicated that it's not protesters that have been the instigators of clashes that have turned violent. She, basically laid that at the feet of the federal immigration agents from ICE and Border Patrol. But the attorney from the Department of Justice basically said, yes, it doesn't really matter. It's not the judge's job to determine the facts, and it's not the judge's job. It doesn't really matter what the facts the president is relying on, because the president should be given deference. And so if the Ninth Circuit decides to reverse the Portland judge's decision, but the Seventh Circuit decides to affirm Judge Perry's decision in Chicago, could set up a circuit split and then could be fast-tracked to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, Charlie, what did you think about that? I mean, the judge did, as Hannah mentioned, attack the credibility of the Trump administration in this case.
Yeah, I thought she was pretty outspoken. I don't know if that's the right word for a judge, but she really did lay into him. And she basically suggested that the problem that's occurring, it's not because of the protesters, it's because of the federal agents themselves who started it by their aggressive targeting of protesters with tear gas and various military tactics. And at one point she said, I'm going to quote here from a story quoting her, National Guard troops are not trained in de-escalation or other extremely important law enforcement functions that would help to quell the problems. And that the troops in Chicago will only add fuel to the fire that the defendants themselves have started. And she said the Trump administration's attempts in their filings to cast the protesters as violent rebels cannot be aligned with the view of local officials. She said she had no faith in the declarations of federal officials, due in large part of a growing body of evidence that Department of Homeland Security's views are, quote, simply unreliable. She said there's no credible evidence there's a danger of rebellion in the state of Illinois. And so that, I guess, kind of, I mean, obviously, I'm sitting here in Springfield. I've not been to Broadview. I've not been to the court or anything. But the reports that I've seen and read of what was going on in Broadview and elsewhere in the city don't comport with the notion that somehow there's this huge rebellion going on, and we have these folks trying to overthrow the government. As a matter of fact, if memory serves correctly, the last time there was a huge effort to overthrow the government was actually people trying to overturn the election of Joe Biden, what, 5 years ago. And of course, Trump pardoned all the people convicted for involvement in that. As I say, the back and forth, and Hannah, you were there in person, and I was just following it in tweets from reporters, but she really did seem to take after the Trump administration in terms of, you guys can't be serious coming in and trying to feed me this line of malarkey.
Yeah, I mean, she used, not only those examples, but she also cited, other recent examples. Basically, she said in the last 48 hours, let me find the exact quote here. She listed two decisions by her fellow federal judges. One that found that ICE had been violating a federal consent decree that restricted the use of warrantless arrests. Another that enjoined ICE from arresting peaceful protesters and journalists who are trying to cover the protests, and restricts the use of things like chemical agents, which have been, tear gas and these so-called pepper bombs, pepper balls, that have been deployed for crowd control. ICE can't use those for the time being, according to this temporary restriction, restraining order. And then actually, overnight, and this morning, we got two more decisions. Hers was number three, and then overnight, ICE lost its the lawsuit from the Village of Broadview, which had been fighting to get the feds to take down this fencing around the facility, which the Village of Broadview said, we did not agree to this. This is, a big impingement on our local rights, basically. And so she listed those, and then the failure of a federal grand jury to indict three protesters, and then decision from federal prosecutors to drop charges against yet another protester. So she said, quote, "To summarize, in the last 48 hours, in four separate, unrelated legal decisions from four different neutral parties, they all cast doubt on DHS's version of events." And so, this is just, as she said, part of a pattern that, that sets up a huge disparity between the very dark picture that the Trump administration is painting of what's happening in Chicago, versus, these declarations of, she said, two dozen state and local law enforcement officials, plus, basically news reports that all indicate that protests have been mostly peaceful. And she noted that the average crowd size outside the Broadview facility has been 50, and the crowd has never swelled to more than 200.
Charlie, I want to mention something here because I've been reading this from some folks who support the president's position, talking about the National Guard has been called out in the past, even more recently last year during the Democratic National Convention, to help sort of with crowd control, things of that nature. The difference here is the fact that it's the governor usually who is the one who mobilizes these folks, not the president sending them into cities where the local officials say they're not needed. So that's really what gets to the heart of this, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And that I've seen that too, where Trump supporters will say, well, they had the National Guard there. They called them out for the Democratic National Convention. The difference is, as you indicated, Sean, is that, yeah, and that was a cooperative effort. And if I'm not mistaken, some of the Governor Pritzker's staff worked for like a year with the feds, with the state police, with Cook County and Chicago police to coordinate how they were going to handle the security for the convention, the fact that they were anticipating protests, how would they deal with them? And everything went off really well. And it was done in coordination. It was done with cooperation. It was done at the governor's request. It wasn't the president of the United States deciding to drop in National Guard without even consulting with the state, well, telling them about it. These troops suddenly show up in Elwood, Illinois, which is a little bit south of Joliet, which is my hometown. They come as kind of a total shock. And so to me, that's a big difference. It's one thing to cooperate, and it's another thing to impose from on top without even telling the local authorities, who do not want, nor from all the evidence, do not need the National Guard. The ruling saying that the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement violated a consent decree requiring them to document and report probable cause for the arrests they make. Well, Judge Perry's ruling applies to the Northern District of Illinois. It doesn't apply nationwide. On the other hand, the ruling by Judge Jeffrey Cummings has nationwide impact. As a matter of fact, the judge ordered ICE to broadcast the conditions of his consent decree to its offices nationwide. So this could be a very more impactful in the long run opinion if it holds up, because it would require the folks who are doing these arrestings to have some probable cause, to have warrants, and not just drop in on people and arrest them because they kind of look like they may not be good folks.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. Well, let's move on to the state legislature, because the lawmakers are about to return to Springfield for their two-week fall session. We're not sure exactly what will come up during this session, but Hannah, some of the issues that have really been on the public's mind, I think, over the last few months, including things like the ICE enforcement, but also utility costs going up, homeowners insurance premiums. There's talk about a transit package trying to get through. Any chance of any of this happening here in the next couple of weeks?
Well, you know, veto session is always sort of a coin flip. I've seen very, very productive veto sessions, and I've seen veto sessions that have basically been kind of a dud, where everyone kind of walks around the Capitol being like, why are we even here? You know, this is kind of, you know, it's an extension, but definitely escalation of the feelings I think a lot of people had in Springfield this spring. Although, to be transparent, this is the first session that basically I didn't cover any of, because I'm no longer really in the Capitol day to day during session. But, you know, basically the feeling that I got from people I talked to was, because of Illinois' very precarious budget situation, and especially because of the uncertainty that the Trump administration has set up, in the spring, it was indiscriminate cutting of federal programs with DOGE. And then, of course, this summer, it was the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, which is a massive budget agreement that cut, you know, billions of dollars, and will effectively shrink, you know, Medicaid payments to states, which is extremely important to, you know, Illinois, just as it is to many states, among many other things. There's just a big uncertainty. Just in the last couple weeks, maybe last week, it's really hard to even keep track anymore. Trump froze more than $2 billion for Chicago transit projects, which, you know, Democrats view as a basically punishment of blue states like Illinois. And so in regards to transit, which is an issue that did not get solved this spring, of course, transit agencies are facing what they projected as something like $700 billion fiscal cliff, which I think recently has been downgraded by a little bit, I think maybe $200 million, but still very sizable. These agencies are very worried, and they point to cities like Philadelphia, where their local SEPTA system has, you know, basically gone off that fiscal cliff, and service has not been reliable. According to my colleagues' latest reporting, you know, lawmakers are very ready to move on transit reform, but like finding the funding agreement, it's still very much up in the air. And people have been meeting, you know, very consistently throughout the summer, and now that it's, we're a month into fall, basically. But it remains to be seen whether it could be in veto session. Officially, the cliff, you know, the falling off of the cliff wouldn't happen until January. And it's possible that if you had some days in Springfield in early January and had an agreement, you could go, you know, call a session, do some quick votes, and then get out of there, and then service wouldn't be interrupted for too terribly long. But, you know, I don't think people want to go down that road. Although, of course, I've seen that happen in Springfield many times because, of course, nothing drives these people like a deadline.
Well, and as you mentioned, Hannah, the precarious fiscal position of the state, Charlie, that seems to be getting more precarious with every story I read. And the latest involved the governor's budget office. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, there was a report released on Thursday, and we're recording the show on Friday, so yesterday, that detailed the impact of the federal tax and spending policies, particularly the budget reconciliation bill, on what our economy is going to be in our revenues. And one of the bottom lines is that general fund revenues, and I'm quoting here from the report, are now projected to be a net $449 million lower than earlier estimates due to an estimated $830 million reduction in state tax revenue due largely to automatic state tax law conformity with federal corporate tax cuts. The feds in Trump's big, beautiful bill continued some tax cuts, created new ones, basically to benefit the corporate world. And so because Illinois' tax is basically, our corporate income tax basically is piggybacked onto the federal rules and regulations. So because the feds are giving these breaks, it's going to impact Illinois, and it's going to cost us the, according to the governor's Office of Management and Budget, it's going to reduce our revenues in this coming fiscal year from corporate income tax by $730 million, which is a huge hit. And the suggestion is being made that what we need to do, or what the state should do, is in the upcoming veto session, decouple the state's corporate income tax from the federal structure. In other words, in essence, maintain the status quo as it was before the feds acted. Now, from my perspective, that's going to require a very difficult vote for lawmakers, particularly for Republicans who are pretty closely aligned to the business community. And obviously, corporate Illinois is not going to want to have to pay these additional taxes. So my guess would be, and this goes back to what Hannah mentioned about deadlines, if we do anything in the fall, it will be with just a simple majority instead of the three-fifths required for it to become effective immediately. It would be a simple majority, and the date would be set for it to become effective on January 1st. And so what that would mean would be that when corporations go to file their income taxes, the law for will be the same as it is, or as it was before the feds acted. And so that would be a way to get around having to come up with additional votes. And that would be my guess. And I'm guessing that would be something that the legislature or the leadership may well want to do. And as a matter of fact, good government groups in Illinois, the League of Women Voters, actually endorsed the notion that the state should decouple itself. It was a press release that came out earlier this week. And in essence, it said that we should decouple, among other things, we should decouple the income tax, our income tax provisions from the new federal tax changes to avoid automatic Illinois revenue reductions. So I could see that happening. I'm guessing transit, it's still the same old question. How do we pay for it? And there's griping from some people, suburbanites, saying that the proposed new structure for maintenance is going to shortchange us. The various agencies, the CTA, Metra, which is the commuter rail system, and PACE, the bus system, would prefer to keep their current structure, and they just have the state give them money. But I don't think the will is there in the General Assembly to provide any money without some kind of reform of the structure.
Well, we'll continue to follow what happens in the fall session and beyond right here on State Week. But we'll turn now to our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
I saw a news release, and it kind of struck me as, what would you say, sort of really putting the tapping on all this discussion about what a horrible place Chicago is. You know, Kristi Noem bad-mouthing it, Donald Trump bad-mouthing it. And I remember saying on the program before, Trump was saying, this is one of the worst cities in the world. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm in Gaza, I'm going to say what? If I'm in Kiev, I'm going to say what? So anyway, my point is that there was a news release that came out from the Condé Nast Traveler Reader's Choice Awards. That's a national magazine, obviously, that covers people interested in tourism. So that, but anyway, Chicago was named the best big city in the United States by Condé Nast Reader's Choice Awards, the 9th year in a row that the city got that award. Governor Pritzker pointed out that in his statement accompanying the news release, while critics try to paint Chicago as something to fear, the rest of the world knows the truth. This is the best big city in America. As I say, I think that's kind of a counterpoint to all the bad-mouthing the city gets. And as a matter of fact, as we mentioned in a prior show, the city also had, its local hotels had the strongest summer on record for room demand and revenues.
And Hannah.
Well, on Monday, former Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan is set to report to prison to serve his 7.5-year term. Last I checked, the Federal Bureau of Prisons still has not assigned him a correctional center. But I guess maybe if it's in Terre Haute, as his attorneys had requested, maybe I'll spend part of the weekend driving down to Indiana. I don't know. But relatedly, former AT&T Illinois President Paul Asciazza is set to enter into a deferred prosecution agreement. This came yesterday morning. I listened into a telephonic hearing where this news came about. And basically that means if he stays out of trouble for a year, basically the charges against him will kind of quietly go away. He was, of course, accused of bribing Madigan through AT&T paying an associate of the former speaker. But in his original trial last September and in Madigan's trial, both juries deadlocked on those charges. And I think this is an admission from the feds that those charges were not that strong to begin with. And it would be kind of a waste of time and resources to retry him as he was supposed to be in January.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Capital News Illinois' Hannah Meisel. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.